Yo, Snoop Dogg and D.I.
Guess who's back?
Still doing that shit, Andre?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Check me out.
It's still Dre Day. AK. Though I've grown a lot, can't keep it home a lot. Cause when I frequent the spots that I'm known to rock, you hear the bass from the truck when I'm on the block. Ladies, they pay homage, but haters say Dre fell off. How? My last album was The Chronic. They wanna know if he still got it. They say rap's changed. They wanna know how I feel about
it. You ain't up on pain.
Dr. Dre is the name. I'm ahead of my gang. Still puffing my leaf. Still with the beats. Still not loving police. Still rock my khakis with a cuff and a crease. Still got love for the streets. Reppin' 213. Still the beats bang. Still doing my thing. Since I left, ain't too much change.
Still I'm representing for them gangsters all across the world.
Still
hitting them corners and them lolos, girl.
Still taking my time to perfect the beat. And I still got love for the streets. It's the D.R.E.
I'm representing for them gangsters all across the world.
Still
hitting them corners and them lolos, girl.
Still taking my time to perfect the beat. And I still got love for the streets. It's the D.R.E.
Since the last time you heard from me, I lost some friends. Well, hell, me and Snoop, we dipping again. Kept my ear to the streets. Signed Eminem. He's triple platinum, doing 50 a week. Still, I stay close to the heat. And even when I was close to defeat, I rose to my feet. My life's like a soundtrack I wrote to the beat. Street rap like Cali weed. I smoke till I'm asleep. Wake up in the AM, compose a beat. I bring the fire till you're soaking in your seat. It's not a fluke, it's been tried, I'm the truth. Since turn out the lights from the world-class wrecking crew. I'm still at it, after mathematics. In the home of drive-bys and acmatics. Swap meets, sticky green and bad traffic. I dip through, then I give
still,
you the D.R.E.
I'm representing for them gangsters all across the world.
Still
hitting them corners and them lolos, girl.
Still taking my time to perfect the beat. And I still got love for the streets. It's the D.R.E.
I'm representing for them gangsters all across the world.
Still
hitting them corners and them lolos, girl.
Still taking my time to perfect the beat. And I still got love for the streets. It's the D.R.E. It ain't nothing but mohawk shit. Another classic CD for y'all to vibe with. Whether you're cooling on the corner with your fly, lay back in the shack, play this track. I'm representing for the gangsters all across the world.
Still hitting them corners and them lolos, girl.
I'll break your neck, damn near put your face in your lap. Try to be the king, but the ace is back.
So you ain't up on things.
Dr. Dre be the name, still running the game. Still got it wrapped like a mummy. Still ain't tripping, love to see young blacks get money. Spend time out the hood, take their moms out the hood. Hit my boys off with jobs, no more living hard. Barbecues every day, driving fancy cars. Still gon' get my regard.
I'm representing for them gangsters all across the world.
Still
hitting them corners and them lolos, girl.
Still taking my time to perfect the beat. And I still got love for the streets. It's the D.R.E.
I'm representing for them gangsters all across the world.
Still
hitting them corners and them lolos, girl.
Still taking my time to perfect the beat. And I still got love for the streets. It's the D.R.E.
I'm representing for them gangsters all across the world.
Still
hitting them corners and them lolos, girl.
Still taking my time to perfect the beat. And I still got love for the streets. It's the D.R.E.
Like that? Right back up in you. 9-5 plus 4 pennies. Add that shit up. D.R.E. Right back up on top of things. Smoke some with your dog. No stress, no seeds, no stems, no sticks. Some of that real sticky, icky, icky. Ooh wee. Put it in the air, air, air. Boy, you's a fool, D.R.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the B-Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Kautzer, and today is a very momentous occasion. We are celebrating our 150th podcast episode. The B-Movie Podcast has been around for, as the notes say, approximately 480 days, which, wow, it's a long time. I mean, it started around April the 14th of 2016, and we've been chugging along ever since. So it's I just felt like with 150 episodes in that we'd do something special, kind of similar to what we did during our centennial episode, the episode 100, where we did a commentary. We're going to change up the format and do something a little bit different. I'd been thinking about this for a while and realized that that maybe it would be interesting to have a little bit of a getting to know you session. I kind of talked about myself a little bit during the inaugural episode, what I affectionately had called episode zero. But unless you're willing to go onto the site and stream it from there, iTunes doesn't have that anymore. And plus, it really didn't give you a lot. It just kind of gave you more my intent with the podcast. And as of right now, since it's 150-ish episodes in, I thought that maybe it'd be interesting to just kind of like call some questions together and answer them for you. So I've kind of collated a bunch of just various questions from examples from different podcasts, from questionnaires that I've seen over the years, and just kind of come up with a bunch of just different questions to kind of give you an idea of who I am, some of my tastes outside of the B-movie realm, because we don't really talk a lot about that, and just kind of go over some information, maybe some interest information of interest to you. So there's not going to be a movie that we're going to talk about per se. We're going to talk about many movies on this podcast, because the questions are very specifically aimed towards movies for the most part. But there are some interesting things here that I will talk about. So enjoy the music, because there's going to be some interludes in between these questions. This is all kind of like my personal taste. So episode 150, whether you like it or not, you can always skip it. I will not feel offended, but it's kind of all about me. Very narcissistic, very kind of this era where maybe you want to get to know me a little bit more to understand where I'm coming from with the curation and how I do things. So without further ado. All right. So how the format's going to go is I'm going to read the question off, and then I will answer the question. Very simple, very straightforward, nothing too complex about it. So my first question is, what home video equipment do you have? Okay, so this is being mentioned because on, I guess you would call the Film Dispenser Prime podcast one of our sister podcasts, because we're a part of the Film Dispenser Network, Film Dispenser Podcast Network. That's a mouthful to say, but it's definitely fun to say. Scott, one of the co-hosts of Film Dispenser Prime, kind of outed me on this little weird proclivity that I have, which is that I have some backup TVs. So in answer to people's question, my home video equipment, what it works out to is I have an LG 55-inch 3D Blu-ray in my living room, or 55-inch 3D TV. LED. The model number is 55LM6410. Now I have, now as Scott has kind of pointed out, is that I have this one, and then I have an extra version of that, and then I also have I have a 4K LG 3D model that I recently purchased. That's also in storage. I have a very nice storage unit someplace away from my house, so like these things can be stored because they're massive boxes. So it's a nice little climate controlled area, and I have these two along with a couple of other things, some Blu-ray players, some spare Blu-ray 3D Blu-ray players, because we don't talk about this here, but 3D is kind of going away, much to my dissatisfaction on home video. 3D on home video is just flat out fucking amazing. Like, you don't have problems with the lamp, like the projection. It's perfect presentation on home video, especially with a really nice TV. So, and I do, I have a reasonably decent TV, the 55 inch, and then, but the new 4K that I haven't brought out yet is 65. So it's even bigger. And then I also have a really bad rinky-dink $80 projector that I use during the summer, during summer and winter, whenever I want to watch like something like on the B-movie podcast that I feel like is what I would like to call drive-in worthy, because it, like, you know, throwing up on a wall at 110 inches is quite the feat. But this is like a cheap projector, so it's like literally a knockoff projector that I got for, I think it was on sale for like $80, and it literally just projects onto my wall. I have it set up. I have it like connected so that it runs through one of my stereo systems. My actual, like my CD and vinyl sound system is what it runs through, because it's in our like living room. So just projects it. It's a very basic setup, very kind of shitty projector, so there's no need to put a screen up. Maybe eventually I might go projector out. I have some plans, but for the most part, I'm not a big projector fan. I know that Scott and also Spencer both are huge projector fans. And I mean, I've seen it in optimal conditions, but I have an idea of what I would want if I wanted that projector and wanted to go that route, and I'm just not there yet. So that does bring me to my Blu-ray players. I do have a couple of them. I have a PS4. I have an LG, which is a BP165, which is a region-free Blu-ray player. And then I also have a Sony BDP-S5500, which is also an all-region. If you're a film fanatic, and especially like a B-movie fanatic, you want all-region, just so that you can shop elsewhere to find those things that you may not necessarily have access to in the US. And like, this kind of dovetails back into like the 3D Blu-ray, but a lot of 3D is still alive and very well in Europe and in Asia, in the Asian markets. So you can get a lot of great things on Blu-ray and 3D that were released here but never released on 3D. Like a couple of the recent ones that I've gotten, The Great Wall, which, I mean, yeah, I know what people are going to say, but it's a fun movie and it's got some great 3D in it. The BFG, released in Europe as a 3D, but not here. Resident Evil, The Final Chapter. You know, as you guys know, with our Resident Evil series, I'm a huge fan of that, of that particular video game B-movie series. And that's also not been released here, but it's also released abroad. So there's like a bunch of things that you can get region free. I mean, Arrow, there is a huge selection of Arrow Video stuff that's UK based. A lot of the UK boutique labels have things that just aren't in the US. So, you know, as a collector, you kind of want both, so you can dip your toes into both sides of the pond, so to speak. So yeah, that's my equipment. I have an old school 5.1 Onakio THX certified receiver. It's so old, in fact, that when I tried to look to see what the model number was, it's been so banged around and dinged up that the model number, the actual front end that has the model number, has been dinged in. And then I looked in the back and I can't find the model number, so unfortunately I don't have it. It's a 5.1 system. It does not do like 6.1 or anything like that, but I am thinking about maybe upgrading my sound system, though much to probably the chagrin of my girlfriend, who says that I'm constantly deaf because of the sound levels that I'm watching movies at. So here are some just quick, like informational things about me, like movies, movie wise. What is my favorite movie of all time? That would be Akira Kurosawa's classic Seven Samurai. It was something before, but over the last I'd say 10 or 15 years, the amount of times that I've watched The Seven Samurai, the amount of enjoyment and just sheer fascination I have with the film and the filmmaker has just bumped it up slowly but surely to my top, to my favorite movie of all time. And I mean, why not? It's one of the greatest movies ever made, if not the greatest movie, at least in my estimation. What's my favorite horror movie? That's John Carpenter's The Thing. I'd given it a lot of thought, and you know, at a certain point it was Exorcist, but over time, the amount of rewatching I've done with The Thing, the way that like, you know, all of the discussions I've had about The Thing as compared to The Exorcist, and just what The Thing means to me as a film fan and a film geek, it's just by far and away, like, a distant second would probably be The Exorcist. What's my favorite movie theater? Okay, so there, like, I mean, I live in LA, so I'm in the hub of premiere presentations for film. Now, I'm going to go with theatrical exhibition and not like in, like, you know, like insider things, because, you know, I think that probably the best place to see a film projected in any format is probably the DGA. I've been there a couple of times, and it's always just been a startling experience. But not many, like, that's not like a day-to-day theatrical exhibition. That's that the DGA has these specific screening rooms. So let's talk like theatrical exhibition, like regular walk up, pay for the ticket. The ArcLight in Hollywood, that also has the Cinerama Dome, but by far and away consistently, and like, you know, has the best presentation over the last 15 years, and their staff, they're very forward thinking. Everybody's very respectful there, which for me is a really big thing, with theatrical presentation. Like, I don't want to fucking hear about your day. While we're watching a movie, fuck you. Go ahead and go someplace else and do that shit. Stay at home and watch Netflix. I don't pay to watch a movie so I can hear you fucking rattle on and prattle on about your fucking social media. Fuck you. The theater is a holy place. It is a place where you come to worship storytelling, and it deserves its utmost respect, your utmost respect. If you can't handle that, get the fuck out, please. Save us all your fucking stupid prattling bullshit, and you know who you are, the people that do this. I'm pretty sure that none of you guys here, none of you guys and gals here on this podcast would ever do something so you know, abhorrent to the theater experience. But ArcLight kind of makes sure that that doesn't happen. The ArcLight in Hollywood is like my favorite. Other ones, the new Bev, just for their curation. I mean, where else can you go where you're continually having Quentin Tarantino curate double features? I mean, part of the inception of the B-Movie podcast and the way that it worked was inspired partially by the New Beverly and the work that they do. Because if you're in LA and you're a film geek, if you haven't gone to the new Bev, then you really aren't, you don't have your card yet. You don't have your film geek card yet. It's the Mecca to where, you know, you go to pray at least once. It's a great little rinky dink theater that plays just continually plays an impressive lineup of films. And, I try to go at least once or twice a month. At least once a month, because there's always something playing, always some double feature that's great. And it's just to support the theater and support like independent theaters. And it's worth it. It's just such a great theater for just outright beauty. of a theater, the Hollywood Egyptian, which is handled by the American Film Institute, AFI. They I guess you could say they quote unquote own it. And they hold, the AFI holds a lot of their screenings, which all goes to, like, you know, their film conservation, charity work, like all of these screenings and such that they have. It's just a beautiful theater. I fucking love the theater. I love the way that it's set up. I love the architecture. They were able to save it, and bring it back to its former glory, back when it was a, Sid Grauman's. And then the last one, just for the sheer fuck you-ness of it, in Westwood, The Village, or The Fox. Some people call it The Fox, but it's actually The Village. That's right across the street from the Bruin. One of the biggest houses in LA. I think it holds 1,300 people. It's got like 100, I think it's got a 100-foot screen. It's huge. It's where, in my childhood, like, you know, in my childhood, Hollywood was not the place to see movies. And like, if you were a film geek, you went to Westwood. There were a couple of theaters in Westwood that were above and beyond. You had the Fox or the Village, you had the Bruin, and you had the National. You did have the Avco, the General Cinema Avco, but then they fucking cut that theater. They cut it up and they made it into this weird, wonky ass fucking like multiplex, when it really should have just been the one theater, because that was the theater that actually Star Wars in Westwood premiered at, and it played there fucking like forever and a day, and it was a great theater when it was not cut up. But I mean, we're talking about like really early childhood. But if you wanted to see, like, when I was a teenager, if you wanted to see movies like on the big screen with the biggest, loudest, baddest ass sound, then you went to Westwood and you saw it at the three biggies: the Bruin, the National, or the Fox slash Village. And I mean, I've seen some of the like biggest movies of the 80s and 90s there. The Fugitive, like every single Batman movie up until Batman and Robin. So the first three, so Batman Returns, and then Batman Forever. I saw like most of my James Cameron films there because it played there. I think the last like really, really like big momentous one that I went to there opening weekend was Titanic. I think I saw it in 70 millimeter there over that weekend, that opening weekend. So yeah, The Village, it's still a great theater. Just so such a pain in the ass to get to in Westwood, because it's like literally like people think Hollywood's hard parking. Actually, Hollywood's gotten better with their parking. Do I prefer fiction or nonfiction movies? I prefer fiction movies, you know, narrative, non-documentary films, though I do have a huge soft spot for documentaries. Of course, I mean, every film fan should love documentaries, but more so as I've gotten older, I've come to really appreciate the documentary film, the documentary format, and what it can bring and enrich in your life as a film fan. Do you usually watch movies at home or at a movie theater? Well, of course, like anybody, mainly at home. I mean, I'm watching anywhere between 7 to 13 films a week, and I know that's a lot of films, but I mean, of course, I'm podcasting, I'm writing for the site, you know, I'm researching for larger pieces that I write for the site, so there's a constant rotation of films that are being shown at you know, in the house. So I would say mainly at the house, but I mean, of course, I love theatrical exhibition. Have you ever seen the same movie more than once? Of course. Now, as a side note, let's talk about some of the movies that I saw that I've seen multiple times from my childhood all the way into adulthood. So we're looking at like some of the movies: Raiders of the Lost Ark, Road Warrior, Star Wars, Say Anything, John Carpenter's The Thing, Buckaroo Banzai, RoboCop. Let's see. The Godfather, Heat. These are all movies that I've seen at least. I also have it written down, not to forget, Reservoir Dogs and True Romance. Some of these films I've seen upwards of 50 times. I mean, of course, it goes without saying Seven Samurai is something that I've seen a lot of, too. But these are films that I've not mentioned that were definitely big things in my life and watched it multiple times. How often do I go to the movie theater? Including screenings, anywhere between 2 to 3 times a week. That's on average. How often do you buy movies? Okay, so at least once a week. I have a lot of stuff, like, because I review Blu-rays for the B-Movie Isle, I do have a steady stream of review copies coming in, so that does cut down on purchasing things. Not because I don't want to purchase things or I don't need to purchase things, but it's just the sheer volume of movie watching that I'm having to do just will compile and add on. So it's I have a very strict dictum when it comes to buying things. I think that a lot of, like, my fellow, like, B-movie bloggers or bloggers that are into the cult and exploitation films kind of all, we all hover around the same things. So I have a list for my library, and those lists, like, you know, they're set up everywhere. My phone, my computer, on a OneNote doc, you know, just various places that I can very easily grab it. And then I wait until sales, and I just do bargain hunting. A lot of my purchases are bargain hunting. Just different things, like different sales, like Kino Lorber right now, and it's August 2017 right now, and Kino Lorber has a Blu-ray sale where they have everything in their KL Classics line, anywhere between 45 to 60% off. So I have a list of Kino Lorber titles or KL Classic titles that I want. I'm going to go through them once I, you know, done my responsibility as an adult, and I'll purchase a few of them. Because, I mean, at $8 a piece, that's a lot better than $16, $17 a piece. Same thing with the Criterion Collection, which is currently going on right now, too. I have a list of the discs that I want, and I pick them up. I have a little slush fund for purchasing my films. And so I go in and I get the things that I want and I get the fuck out. Like Criterion this year was, or this summer's sale, it was very minimal. It was, I picked up Rumblefish, Antonioni's Blowout, Tampopo, Lost in America, of course, Albert Brooks's Lost in America, and then Stalker. Those were the movies that I bought, like 5 of them, and that was it. I've done. I mean, even though it's extended, there are other things that I want. Just can't do it. So I do a lot of my shopping on sales. All of my shopping for my collection I do on sales, and it's very specific. It's not like new titles or anything like that. It's to fill my library out with the odds and ends that I want. I have an idea of what my collection should be. Like any film geek, we all have our idea of what our collection should be and how our collection is. Now, some people are not physical media anymore. I'm old school. I love physical media. I will be purchasing physical media until the day I die. Why? Because streaming goes away. I'm sorry, guys, but the noobs that are all about streaming, I understand the space considerations, but, you know, things go away and streaming titles go away. So if you want to watch something like I didn't have The Last Action Hero, and it was on Netflix forever and a day. This is just as an example. It was on Netflix forever and a day, and I hadn't purchased the Blu-ray. So of course, the day that I do have an inkling to watch it for something that I'm writing, a longer term piece, I go and look, and guess what? It's not fucking there. Netflix doesn't have it anymore. Check Hulu. It's not there. I've since gotten rid of Hulu. HBO. I've gone to these different places that I have, and no one is streaming the title. So I go online and I look, and guess what? Fucking Blu-ray is like $15. I'm not going to buy it. I'm not going to stream it either. I'm not going to buy a rental streaming because it's not worth it. So I just have to sit on it. But you bet your ass that goes on the list. And eventually when it dropped to like $4.99 on Blu-ray, I bought it. And so now I forever have The Last Action Hero, which may not be a big deal to you guys, but being able to have that access, it's absolutely what I want. And that's what I love. I love actually having a library of movies, an actual physical copy. I mean, I think we've talked about that a little bit before, but that's the way that I approach purchasing movies. If a book has been made into a movie, which would you prefer to do first? See the movie or read the book? I read the book because it's the media of origin. Like anything, like I approach as a film viewer, I approach movie viewing is this. It's a media in which to tell stories. Well, if I'm seeing an adaptation in this media or medium, I want to read or disseminate whatever it is from the original content, the pure undiluted. There's a movie coming out in, I guess it would be next year sometime, called Annihilation. Annihilation is actually based off of a book that I've already read, and I'm actually going through the series, and it's a great, this great sci-fi series of novels that takes place in the future. I won't ruin it, but I read them because of the fact that Alex Garland, who's directing him, also directed Ex Machina, the great sci-fi film that maybe we will get into. I'm not sure. It's like it hovers between A and B. We'll see what happens over the next couple of years to see whether it's forgotten or it's still championed and raised up in high regard. But as soon as he was attached, I bought the books so I could read them because I want to see what attracted him, and I want to read the original like intent. I think that anybody should do that, or everybody should do that as a consumer of media. What is the scariest movie you have ever seen? Damn, that's really hard. I'm not somebody that like, I like effective horror, like Supernatural, you know, Gross Out, but they don't really affect me like in the way that scares, like, you know, scares and tauntness. So like I went sideways on this, and because reality is a lot more scary to me than anything else. The first film is something that I just recently saw, and it just kind of, it shook me. Hounds of Love. You might have heard about this. It's an Australian film about a girl who is kidnapped by a couple that are just this horrendous couple. She is abused and just is kidnapped, held hostage, like continually abused and raped. It is a hard, harsh movie that scares the ever living shit out of you because this is based off of a true story. But talk about transcendent horror. This is an amazing piece of work. I've not written about it because I honestly don't know how to approach writing or even talking about this film. I'm hoping that next week's podcast, where we're going to be talking about The Killer Inside Me, which also has some very problematic stuff, it's very disturbing. Maybe that will get me to push towards finding an entry point of how to talk about Hounds of Love, because it is an amazing film and scared the shit out of me. Another one, Martyrs. Martyrs is the original French movie. I know that there's a remake out there that is also scarier than shit. Though not based on a true story, I think it's just fucking crazy French people coming up with some crazy sick shit. what is your favorite movie related book? I have a couple. I just finished the Kubrick Archives, the Titian massive coffee table book about the production and pre-productions of Kubrick's work. That was fucking impressive as shit. It was all sanctioned by the Kubrick estate. And so they have some really amazing stuff there in that book. It's just this massive tomb. It's like 1,000 pages, and it goes over everything, including his non-produced work. It was in a $300 or a $500 Titian gift coffee table book, but now they've made it into one volume that's relatively cheap. I think I got it for $14.99 when it was on sale, but I think it's backed up to $30. Great book. Amazing. It's like one of my favorites, even though I just read it. Pauline Kael's collected works. I can't see it from here. It's in the living room. I always keep it in the living room, but it's the one that that collects all of her different collected collected reviews. And that's a great one. She was one of the first critics that I really read and, kind of started me on my path to understanding film in a better way. Hitchcock Truffaut, the amazing book of interviews between the two filmmakers. That's a great one. If Chins Could Talk, Bruce Campbell's autobiography, great. Another great book. Rebel Without a Crew, Robert Rodriguez's journal autobiography. That's another one that's great. Kenneth Turan, any of the books that Kenneth Turan's collected review editions, I love and I own. What else is there? God, there's just so many. It's wonderful to create Kurosawa's autobiography or something of an autobiography, because he talks about his childhood and goes all the way up to Rashomon. And that's the book. But it's amazing. Sidney Lumet's Making Movies. That's an amazing book. There's so many out there, but those are some of my favorites. What's the funniest movie you've ever seen? Well, this is where you're going to find out the kind of sense of humor I have. It falls on the dark and violent side, I guess you could say. Andrew Dominik's Chopper, Milos Forman's Once Who Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and Billy Wilder's Some Like It Hot are all films that I continually find hilarious. When I was younger, it was Airplane, the sequel, The Mask. I loved The Mask when I was a kid. Dumb and Dumber. Naked Gun, the first one, but for obvious reasons, not so much anymore. We don't talk about those anymore, but those are some of the movies that I find funny. But definitely Chopper, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and Some Like It Hot are probably three of some of the funniest movies. What's the most romantic movie you've ever seen? Okay, so I know this is going to sound weird, but I'm not a big person into romance in films. It just doesn't fucking work for me. And I think partially the reason why is because affairs of the heart are the affairs of the heart. That is the easiest way to pull me out of a film, is to show some kind of romance between two people that aren't in love. Romance is so much more than just saying I love you or never saying sorry again or any of that kind of bullshit. I think that movies can be a lot of things, but I don't know if they can be romantic. I've never, after I went through my first relationship and the highs and lows that entailed, falling in love and getting your heart broken, I just realized that the spectrum of what romance is can never be duplicated in film. And anybody who proposes to think that they can make romance on screen, I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me. Nothing that I've seen is particularly romantic. I just, you know, romance is something that's experienced and not told and discussed. So there's your answer for that. Maybe a bit of a curveball, huh? What's the worst movie I've ever seen? Well, I know the easy answer now is The Room, but to be honest with you, The Room, I mean, it's just bad. Like, I mean, and this is coming from a guy who, like, you know, champions movies that oftentimes are considered bad. I mean, as we know, I'm running the B movie podcast. The Room is just, it might be lazy. I don't know. Like, I'm not a fan of the movie. Like, I know that people love it ironically, and they call it one of the worst movies of all time. I would have a tendency to agree that it's probably one of the worst. I don't know if it's the worst. I mean, there are a couple of films that I've just seen that are just, like, horrible, but it's the one that sticks out at the top of my head. Like I've made known here, is that the B Movie Podcast is for positivity and not negativity. So if I don't talk about a film, if you ever reach out to me and you ask me about a film, if I just say, maybe, or, like, you know, it's in the line for curation. Like, if it's in the line for curation, then I'll talk about it. If it's something that I don't mention anything, it's probably because I don't like it or I don't consider it a good movie. Sorry, guys, but that's just the way it works. Who are some of the critics that you have read or currently read? Critics that I grew up with, that I read, Kenneth Turan, because he was the LA Times critic for when I was growing up. A guy that, no matter what, I fucking love the dude. I mean, this is how you know you have a great relationship with a critic, is when the next new movie comes out that you want to see, and you're looking forward to that person's review, and then they say they don't like it, and then you get upset, and then you go see the movie, and you come back, and you reread the review, and you still don't agree with them, but you still can continually read them. That's something that's very much in common with all of these people that I read during, like, my formative years. And Kenneth Turan is probably the most apt version of that. Like I just mentioned, Pauline Kael, Roger Ebert, like many of the people that in my era, FX Feeney, who, if you do not know who he is, go to Google and look him up. He's a great, great, undervalued critic, that did some really great work. And also, he's featured very prominently on the Z Channel documentary. So I would definitely suggest going and checking out his work. Current reads, or people that I'm still reading, like, today, and I read during my formative years, Drew McQueenie and Scott Weinberg, who I love their, I mean, like, everybody does, I think. It's kind of like an uncompromised hit. I mean, it's great. Is 80s All Over. They host that weekly podcast where they review every movie in the 80s month by month. It's just a great podcast. I definitely suggest listening and subscribing to that if you haven't. But those two guys I read, like, you know, McQueenie I read in my, like, you know, in my late teens, early 20s, all the way through till now. Same thing with Weinberg. Weinberg I was reading, I think, in my mid-20s up until now. So they were guys that I really, really liked and respected. Even if I didn't like their opinion, I still respected it a great deal. Recently, Evan Sadoff, Amy Nicholson, Devin Faraci, when he was writing, we miss you, Devin, or at least I miss you, Devin. Like, you know, your polarizing reviews, even when I disliked them, I still respected him. These are people that I read continually when they do reviews. And again, strong voices, unique voices, and not afraid to stick out of the crowd and say that something sucks, which, you know, there have been some times where I'm like, what? But still, you have to respect them. I think it does a critic well to continually read reviews and read criticisms. I think that people who don't, that are like current writers and bloggers or reviewers, are doing themselves a major disservice. I think that if you stop reading reviews and you stop reading reviews of others and how others are approaching points of views, I think that you become stagnated, and the writing tapers off if you approach it like that. I think you need to stay sharp and with things and looking at divergent opinions. It's just my little spiel. Now, I was talking about the 80s all over. That brings us to an interesting question. What podcast do I listen to? So I listen to I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but I listen to very specific podcasts. So you've heard me probably talk about some of these. Junk Food Cinema, Brian Salisbury and Robert Cargill's, or C. Robert Cargill's podcast, very similar to ours, where they review cult and exploitation films. Pure Cinema Pod, Eric Kane and Brian Sowers, amazing, like very new within the last, like, say 6 months, podcasts where they're doing deep cut discussions about topics, using their top five films of a specific topic or subgenre, I should say, and they've mined great territory in the 13 to 14 episodes that they've released so far. Great stuff. I definitely recommend them too. I mentioned Weinberg and McQueenie's 80s All Over. Karina Longworth's amazing You Must Remember This podcast. That is like on par with like some of the best documentaries I've ever seen about Hollywood. I cannot recommend that podcast enough. If you want to class up your joint, you want to class up your podcast, listen to that one. It's beautiful, well researched, well put together. She deserves your attention as much as anybody. If there was any podcast, I would definitely say that one. On the other side of things, there are other podcasts that I listen to that, the Deadcast, which is Deadspin's podcast. It's a sports, they call it the sports lunacy podcast, where they just talk about stupid fucking things from sports, because I think I've mentioned this maybe a time or two, but I'm a big sports fan. I know it sounds weird and goes contrary to everything that film geeks stand for sometimes, or like certain film geeks think that film stands for, but I mean, yeah, I love sports, so there's that. The Wojcast, which is Adrian Wojnarowski, who is a basketball beat writer, his podcast that's just a great, amazing basketball podcast. If you're a basketball fan, you probably already know about the Woj podcast. You probably already know about Woj and the Woj bombs, but if you don't, definitely take a look at that. On the opposite side of basketball, I listen to Bill Simmons' podcast, who, you know, I don't hold it against him. He's from Boston, and he's a Boston Celtics fan and New England Patriots fan, because he still managed to do some really great podcast work. What else do I listen to? Fighting in the War Room, The Movie Crypt with Joe Lynch and Adam Green, which is that is along with You Must Remember This, is like a great, great fucking podcast for. Like, that one is You Must Remember This is about the Hollywood history. If you want insider and insight, The Movie Crypt. Like, Adam and Joe, Adam Green and Joe Lynch, both directors, both great, you know, great raconteurs, have created this, like, podcast that is just as much about the industry and educating people as it is just an entertaining podcast. And then Postmortem with Mick Garris. I'm a huge Mick Garris fan, and he's just running this great podcast that's kind of a revival of his Z Channel show, where he brought on different horror directors and people from the horror industry, and just does like an hour long interview. It's great. He's had some really great luminaries of the genre and genre in general on that, that podcast in the short time that it's been around. Definitely would recommend that too. Who's my favorite actor? Living, Kurt Russell, of course, because I mean, we fucking started the, we started the podcast with a Kurt Russell film. We will, when I, and I've always envisioned this, if whenever I close shop on the B Movie Podcast, it will be with a Kurt Russell film. The final film we discuss will be a Kurt Russell film, and I'm pretty sure I know which one it's going to be. If we ever get to that point, if I get to that point, who knows? I may go on forever with this shit. Not living. I didn't want to say dead, but you know, dead. Toshiro Mifune. Fucking amazing actor. Of course, I mean, he's in my favorite film of all time. Like slowly going through his work, because he has such a like an impressive list of credits and not so impressive. I'm continually floored at the power in which he brings to roles. And I'm still going through his filmography. I've not gotten through it all, but I can definitely say, yeah, dead Toshiro Mifune, no doubt. Favorite actresses, living is. I'm going to go with, I mean, because she's the standard. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, eventually Kate Blanchett will be like the standard, but right now it's still Meryl Streep. And I mean, by far and large, I see everything that Meryl Streep is in. That's something, it's not a dirty secret. It's just, it's something that I don't think that people who would maybe listen to the B-Movie podcast would think of as like as my favorite actress or as an actress that I would go see everything she's in. I mean, fuck, I even saw her in that fucking Margaret Thatcher movie. Jesus. I mean, you know, yeah, Margaret Thatcher. No, thank you. You know, really, but because she's in the movie, of course I'm going to go fucking see it because it's fucking Meryl Streep. I mean, she is by far and large our greatest actor living right now. Fight me on it. Try to. And I will come back you each time and tell you you're wrong because she is. She's amazing. Dead or passed on, Myrna Loy. I am a huge Myrna Loy fan. I almost was going to say William Powell and Myrna Loy for this, like for these two respective questions, but like Toshiro Mifune more so than William Powell, but Myrna Loy, I love her work. I think that she's great. I mean, obviously, the Thin Man series is a huge thing for me. Ran that whole entire film series for my birthday celebration, and I loved everything that she like everything behind the scenes that she did. Like as a public figure is quite amazing and worthy of like adoration, definitely. Favorite film director, Akira Kurosawa. For just the, like, I mean, it's obvious. I think it's obvious reasons. I mean, he's probably the greatest director that ever lived. I mean, to me, at least in my estimation, he has at least 10 classic films that could be in the discussion for, like greatest movies ever made, like top 50. And if you have 10 of those, that you corner the fucking market. At least in my estimation. And like I said, he's directed one of the greatest dramas of all time in Rashomon. One of the greatest adventure films of all time in Seven Samurai. One of the greatest I hate to call it illness movies, but illness movies of all time in Ikuru, which also could be considered another great drama. Another great modern era drama in Red Beard. I mean, they're just the it goes on and on. I learned so much from Kurosawa, not just from a storytelling or editing or acting perspective, but just in life, he was a humanist that loved people and loved human nature, both good and bad, and was wanted to look into that and looked at it without any sort of frills. He always managed to make films that, regardless of whether or not the person was good or bad, he brought the humanity out in them. And that was that's the most amazing thing in his films, is just the humanity, the level of humanity that's on display. What is your favorite animated movie? That would be Akira. I know that sounds weird, but Akira. I cannot think of a more influential animated film other than maybe, like, you know, the Disney stuff. But that is my favorite animated movie of all time. I remember seeing it. I distinctly remember seeing it when I was a kid, literally in junior high. It was the first anime film I saw, and just kind of blew me away. And the funniest thing I think about Akira is the most damning thing about it is that if you saw it at the right age, it kind of ruined anime for you, because after that movie and how detailed and complex the, not just the animation is, but the storytelling is, you go back to other anime and you go, oh, wow, okay. With the exception of like Ghibli and a couple of other places, the level of maturity, I mean, it's like somebody seeing like 2001 A Space Odyssey as one of their first films, and then everything else just seems like, oh, okay. So yeah, Akira. What is your favorite movie soundtrack? That would be Pulp Fiction. I can't think of another soundtrack that I listened to more that was more influential in my life. I mean, I was there opening weekend watching Pulp Fiction, and every needle drop, or I think it's called needle drop, I can't remember, but every soundtrack, every piece of score or song that was used in that film, it blew me away. I still marvel at that soundtrack and just how good and unifying it is as a piece of, it's more score than it is a soundtrack, which is really interesting, because it does the job of both a soundtrack and a score at the same time. So yeah, Pulp Fiction. My favorite movie score is Clint Mansell's score for The Fountain, which, if you've never heard that, and if you've never seen The Fountain, Jesus, go out and do both. Watch the movie and then listen to the score. I will guarantee you that it will become one of your favorite scores of all time. Clint Mansell's music is just as beautiful as the movie itself, and is half the reason why that movie works as well as it does. What is your favorite documentary? Steve James's Hoop Dreams. I fucking love that movie. I think that a movie as a documentary, as a picture of the times, as a metaphor for America, I don't think you can get better than this 3-hour documentary epic about these two African American boys in Chicago that have dreams of getting beyond their economic places and becoming NBA stars. It's emotional, heartwarming, heartbreaking. It's everything that you could possibly want in a movie. And it's just a great fucking documentary. Steve James, as a side tangent, please, like, if you've never seen his work, and specifically his documentary work, go out and seek it out. Watch them all. The Interrupters, Hoop Dreams, all of his documentary work, because it's extremely powerful, and more to the point, it's extremely well made and I think important. So just as a side tangent of making my play to really like, you know, push for you guys to watch Steve James documentaries. Who's my favorite human movie hero?
Buckaroo Banzai. And a lot of it is because, and I think I talked about this on my commentary, so I'll keep my commentary for Buckaroo Banzai, so I'll keep this very brief, but a lot of it has to do with representation for me. I mean, I was a kid who, like, you know, representation on screen was not there for me. I'm half white, a quarter Hispanic and a quarter Japanese. So I'm of mixed race, triracial, as my girlfriend would like to say, because I'm not biracial. And to see this movie about this half Japanese, half American physicist, guitar playing, you know, interdimensional traveler adventurer. It blew me away as a kid. It was powerful. And I think that's where I understand the power of representation and what it means to somebody to see themselves on screen or to relate to people on screen. And I think that ultimately that's where it falls for me, like, and why I find that Buckaroo Banzai is such a favorite of mine is because of the representation, because of the fact that he is ostensibly the hero that I can look up to, or like that I could look up to, because he was like me. And I think that people that don't understand that and don't understand why representation is so necessary is because they probably have representation in their life. They probably see people just like them all the time on TV and in movies, and they don't understand what it's like when you don't have that. And then when you finally do, it's powerful. And okay, here's some more just really, really interesting things. And I'm not going to put any kind of comment on these. Which two movie stars would you like to have as your parents? Let's go with William Powell and Myrna Loy. If you could be a bad guy, if you could be a movie bad guy, which one would you be? I think I'm going to want to go. I want to be T-Rex from Jurassic Park, the original. Which famous person would you like to have for a best friend? I don't want anybody as a best friend that's famous, but let's say reasonably famous or semi-famous. I'll go with Nicholas Winding Refn, because, you know, movie nights with him or talking movies would be fucking amazing. Definitely. If they made a movie about your life, what kind of movie would it be? It'd probably be like an English kitchen sink drama. Which actor would play you in a movie about your life? Probably Jonah Hill. Would you let a movie crew in your house? No. Would you like to be a movie extra? I have, and it fucking sucks. So no, I don't want to be an extra. Do you think there's too much nudity in movies or not enough? I'm going to go with not enough. I don't think that nudity is quite as prevalent as people think that it is. Do you think there is too much violence in movies? No. And if there is, you know what? You can always turn it off if you don't like it. Would you rather be given $500,000 in cash or be in a movie? Fucking give me the $500,000. I can make a short film starring myself if I wanted to. Do you usually eat something while you're watching a film in the theaters? Actually, I don't eat anything in the theaters. Occasionally, when I take my girlfriend me and my girlfriend go see a movie on date night, occasionally, if we don't eat beforehand, we'll get a tub of popcorn. That would be it. I don't like to snack in theaters. I don't like to actually even drink because eventually I have to go use the bathroom and I'll miss the fucking movie. Same thing with eating. Like, you know, you eat the stuff and you eat enough and you might have to go use the bathroom. Fuck that. I'm there to see a movie, not to eat. Have you ever fallen asleep in the middle of a movie in the theater? I hate to say this, but yes, I have. I definitely have. I won't say which movie, but It was a long fucking day. I was coming off of like an 18-hour work day. Went to go see a film, which is a really bad idea, but I had already pre-bought the tickets. And I fell asleep 30 minutes into the movie, missed about 45 minutes of it, watched the last 30 minutes of it, and was completely confused because I didn't realize I kind of fell asleep. That's how tired I was. But yes. What is the longest film you've seen and how many hours was it? Yes. Okay. So I saw the longest movie I've seen is Alexander Berlindersplatz. And I think it's like 8 or 9 hours. Can't remember. I went to go see it and I saw it in, I actually saw it in the theater, like, MoCA or LA MoCA, Los Angeles Museum of Contemporary Art had it as a film series where you could go and see it. It was two nights. And so I saw 1 4-hour chunk one night and then 1 4-hour chunk the other night. Pretty amazing film, pretty heavy duty. But Fassbender's movies have a tendency to be, Warner Rainer Fassbender. His movies have a tendency to be really heavy duty and a lot to take in. So 8 hours of that man's movies is a lot to take in. So, but I'm glad that I went to see it. It was an experience and a half. And yes, that was the longest movie I've ever seen. And, what kind of movie would you like to star in? I'm going to say a film directed by David Lynch. And the supplemental question is, why would I want to? Because it's fucking David Lynch. If you've been watching Twin Peaks, The Return, it's fucking amazing. Like, yes, he may be gaslamping us. He may be fucking putting us through the ringer and just fucking with us. But man, some of the stuff in that TV series, and I know we don't talk TV here, but man, that fucking TV series is fucking amazing. Just fucking outright amazing. And that does it for the questions. You can always reach out to us, Twitter and Instagram. The handle is BMoviePod, the letter B, the word movie, the word pod. All together, no lines, no dashes, no bullshit. If you have any other questions, please go ahead and reach out to me there. I hope this was as fun as it was talking about this stuff and kind of going on to these weird tangents, kind of getting for you guys and gals being able to hear some of my answers that aren't the norm in talking about B movies and giving you a better idea of who I am as a film fan, I guess, in so many ways and terms. But let's hope that it does. We'll be back next time. We have our double feature. We have our double feature series starting up with neo-noir films, and we're going to be looking at neo-noir films period appropriate. With our next double feature, which is The Killer Inside Me and The Black Dahlia. Both modern era films told in period appropriate times for their film noir-ish stories. So stay on the lookout for that later on this week. So until next time,